Well, thanks, Pete. That was a very kind introduction. It is a great, great honour to come to speak, and not a little daunting, I have to say. I regularly listen to talks from KXC on podcast, and you have some wonderful teachers and speakers here, and I've been very, very blessed by many of you, so thank you very much indeed. I love this church. I obviously love the leaders of this church, but I love all that you're doing to bring God's kingdom into King's Cross. So thank you for having me. And the title, as Pete said, is Enlarging Your Heart Through Grief and Loss. Now, we all lose things in life, probably most days. The car keys, the remote control for the television, our mobile phones, in my case, my glasses, and panic sets in, tensions mount, perhaps we blame somebody, and then relief because we eventually find it and all is well with the world. But sometimes we lose things that we can never replace in this life, and this obviously is the worst kind of loss. The loss of a dream, perhaps the pain of singleness, the pain of infertility, the loss of health, the loss of a job opportunity that you hoped for. And of course, there's the loss of a loved one, either through death or through breakup of relationship. And the loss may be gradual or sudden, but we then find ourselves left to work out how to grieve for a world we hadn't chosen, for things that we hadn't wanted to happen. And we may find ourselves in a landscape of darkness, of fear, of bewilderment, and of grief. And we wonder, how will we ever pick up the pieces to love again, to trust again, to hope again, to laugh again, to live again? Now, I have to confess to a bad habit of often reading the last page of a book before I get to the end. I know it's a bad habit, I've been told that, but I still do it. I think it started off when I was a child. I was an avid reader, as I am now, and I'd be so engrossed in the story that I'd want to know, does the baddie get caught? Does the princess marry the handsome prince? And I'd have a quick peek at the end, and then I could relax and enjoy the story. Well, I'm going to do the same now. Because we're looking at this journey of grief and loss, and it's a tough one. There's no quick fixes. There are no easy answers. There's a lot of pain. But so as not to plunge us at the outset into total despondency, I want to read to you one man's summary of the end of his journey. Just to recommend this book, Luminous Dark, written by Alan Emerson. I think it's a really stunning book with lots of insights and wonderful truth in it. But his story was that his wife died at the age of 23 after only 2 years of marriage. She had a brain tumor. The whole church were praying for healing. He believed God would heal her. And then the unthinkable happened, and she died. And he, of course, went through a period of utter grief, loss, bewilderment. And it lasted quite a while, as you'd expect. But this is what he says. There is light at the end of the tunnel. There is hope. And there is more than you could ever imagine in this life and beyond. There are precious holy moments in the travail of a soul burning with pain. I had to remap most of the boundaries of my previous world. But he says, I'm now more integrated, more free, and ultimately I'm more awed by the fact that I'm alive. That's the possibility, and it will look different for every one of us. So now back to the journey. And the question that we're asking is, what counsel does the Bible give us? And wonderfully, we see in the Bible raw grief, protest, anger, despair, disappointment, all being expressed and sometimes thrown at God. And I want to look at four keys that I think are important in this journey, in this process. And the first of these is the importance of expressing our pain and protest. We see in the Psalms, don't we, gut-wrenching emotion expressed and a refusal to say everything is okay when it isn't. And we see this too in the story of Job. Job was a good man, a righteous man, we're told, and he lost pretty much everything. He lost his family, he lost his possessions, he lost his home, he lost his health. And not surprisingly, he shouts at God, why? This is what he says, and this is in the Message version of Job 42. He says this, what did I do to deserve this? I expected good, but evil showed up. I looked for light, but darkness fell. My stomach is a constant churning. I walk under a black cloud. The sun has gone. I howl with the jackals. That's raw. That's real. And I like this by Eugene Peterson, who says, Job is not just a witness to the dignity of suffering in God's presence, but a protest against a religion that has reduced suffering to explanations and answers. Because like many of our own experiences of suffering, Job's was totally undeserved. He'd done nothing wrong, and that's what makes it so shocking. But in the midst of unimaginable pain and injustice, he refuses to settle just for resigned acceptance, shrug of the shoulder. He doesn't bury his feelings inside and hope they'll go away. He howled before God. You know, we in the West are not good at lamenting. We too easily want to give quick answers and put on a smile, everything's going to be all right. If you go to a funeral in other cultures, you will see people groaning, wailing, crying loudly. We tend to, in our funerals, just wipe our eyes quietly or sniff into a handkerchief. But actually, grief is raw and it's real. Dan Allender, in his book, The Hidden Hope of Lament, says that we tend to fear lament as a quick slide into doubt, failing to see that doubt and despair is the necessary dark soil for confidence and joy to grow. If we cannot express our pain, we'll be destroyed by it because it will come out in different ways. And the psalmist knew this. He said, when I keep silent, my bones wasted away through groaning all day long. Now, Pete mentioned that I used to work in a medical practice and GPs would refer people to me. And I remember one day a young man came to see me. He had all kinds of stress-related symptoms in his body. And his story was that his partner of several years had committed suicide. So you can imagine the turmoil, the guilt, the grief, the bewilderment. And he just felt the pain was so great, he couldn't bear to face it. He said he couldn't talk to his friends because, in his words, he said he feared they would think he was a basket case. And so what he did was that he just worked all the hours he could. He got home, he'd put the films on till late at night, he was on social media all the time, he was drinking heavily, anything but face the pain. It was too great. And his body was protesting and saying, you can't live like this. And what I did was I encouraged him to go running. He used to be a runner, but not with his earphones in, but just to run in silence and let the pain come out and to wail if he wanted to groan, to weep. And gradually, he said he was finding the release of this, which led in time to a healing. You see, it's all right to express our anger to God. He can take it. Those of us here who are parents will know that our children can shout at us. Mine have done. And also my grandchildren, who I love very dearly. One of my little granddaughters has been known to say to me a few times, "Nana, you're the worst Nana in all the world." And that's usually because I've said it's time to go to bed now and she doesn't want to go. 15 minutes later, she's tucked up in bed with her arm around my neck saying, "Nana, please stay with me until I fall asleep," which of course I'm delighted to do. And God is the much more heavenly Father. We can shout at him, we can yell at him, and he says, "I'll stay with you." You see, when we're facing some kind of loss, everything we believed seems to be crashing around us. Beliefs that we felt were so secure are up for question. Is God loving? Does God care? Is God powerful? Is he in control? And ultimately, what we're howling at God is, "I'm disappointed with you. You're not who I thought you were. I thought you were going to save me. I thought you were going to heal me. I thought you were going to do this for me." And we're howling at God our disappointment, and he can take it. And one of the ways I think that we can express these deep emotions are through tears, are through groaning, but also through journaling, sometimes through art. I know a young woman who painted and drew and got a lot of her deep pain out that way. It might be reading the Psalms of Lament that give voice to our own feelings and thoughts, or it might be writing our own psalm. There will be times in this process when all we feel is blackness and darkness. Not forever, but for a while. But in this time as well, we will sometimes know a sense of tenderness and peace descending on us. And we catch these moments as graces. We can't make them happen. We can't hold on to them. But for a moment, our souls are stilled and we sense the presence of God before the next wave comes crashing over us. So that's the first key, the importance of honestly expressing our pain and protest. And then the second key, I think, is the importance of silence and waiting in the nothing. What do you do when you cry out to God and get nothing back? What do you do when you're facing a storm and Jesus is asleep in the boat? This is what Job said. "I shout for God and get nothing, no answer. I stand to face you in protest and you give me a blank stare." Wow, that hurts. Why the silence? Well, I remember at one stage when I was working in Birmingham, in the chaplaincy work, at one stage I was seeing quite a lot of asylum seekers. Birmingham was one of the places that had a number of hostels, all pretty miserable, it has to be said, but this is where people arrived. And I would see some of these people with terrible stories. Stories of horror, stories of torture and terror, people who'd lost everything. And I was always so impressed by their dignity. And everything in me wanted to say, "It's going to be all right." I wanted to find words of comfort. I wanted to say, "Look, it's not going to be like this forever. It's going to get better." But those words were just hollow. I knew about Good Friday and suffering, but I knew there was Easter Sunday with resurrection, and I wanted to bring that hope and say it's going to be all right, but it just didn't feel like that, and it didn't feel as though that was bringing any comfort at all. And I remember one morning seeing a young woman who'd come from northern Uganda. She'd been running away from the soldiers, her two children in her arms, and both her children were shot dead. She'd lost everything, like Job. And she sat in my room. We probably shed tears together. And again, what could I say that would be any comfort at all? And when she left, and I think we'd arranged that we'd meet again, I sat in my room and I said, God, what am I not seeing? What am I missing out? And I felt God say to me, not audibly, but just within me, I felt God say, you're missing out on Easter Saturday, often called Black Saturday, a day when there was deafening silence, where everything felt lost. Everything felt wasted. Nobody knew what was going to happen the next day. Yes, the disciples had been told, but they hadn't really got it. It felt like a day of utter, utter despair and darkness. And I felt God say to me, wait with people in Easter Saturday for as long as it takes. It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable to be there. It's not comfortable to sit with people who are there. I read this quote and I forget where, but I think it's very profound. New things happen. New life starts in the dark, whether it's the seed in the ground, the baby in the womb, Jesus in the tomb. New life starts in the dark. And those wounded places in our own heart, those places of grief deep within our soul, are actually the hiding place of God. That's where God loves to come, even though we don't feel it at the time. That is where God is. The absence of God, the silence of God, doesn't mean he's absent. The psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. And what we discover in the silence is that actually God is doing things we can't see, not until we look back. I remember when I was going through a personal time of darkness and bewilderment myself, couldn't really work out what was going on. And I used to go and visit this wonderful nun. It was when we were in Birmingham. I used to go and see her 1 hour every month. And we'd sit in her room and she would listen very quietly and attentively, not often saying a lot. And I told her what I was going through. And she said, Annie, the very first verse in the Bible, Genesis 1:1, says, the Spirit of God hovered over the chaos and the darkness of the unformed world. And at the right time, God said, let there be. And she said to me, in the same way as you offer your darkness and chaos and bewilderment, the Spirit of God is hovering over it. And at the right time, he will say, let there be. And there will be light, and there'll be life, and there'll be color. That's what God is doing. But we can't see it or feel it. But that is what God is doing. And silence and waiting, we know, is deeply uncomfortable and counterintuitive. But as we sit in the presence of God with our pain and our brokenness, we find that we're descending into God. We're sitting under the gaze of his love. And slowly, God is bringing healing to us. In the silence, God is not answering our questions. But as he draws near, as Yahweh,
I am as Emmanuel, God with us. His presence, which is bigger than our pain, beyond our explanations, closer than our breath, breathes life into our souls. And I would just say, if you're in this place yourself of silence and waiting, and it's a tough place to be, it feels like that Black Saturday, but God is at work, and as surely as that seed in the ground is going to grow into something absolutely stunning, that's what God is doing in every one of us as he hovers and broods over us with plans to restore us and heal us beyond anything we could imagine, because that's our God. And then there's the third key, which is honesty. Now, I've mentioned the importance of being honest and expressing our emotions, honest in our prayers. But I just want to say something about the importance of having honest friendships. Job's friends were not one bit helpful. They wanted to be. They tried to fix things and defend God. And I have to tell you, I've done that myself in the past. I'm just as guilty. And it's because everything in us wants to sort of console and comfort. It wasn't one bit helpful. They were trying to explain what God was doing when they hadn't got a clue, and it left Job feeling very, very isolated. But friends who will sit with us, listen to us, walk with us, and pray with us are essential in this bewildering season. And it's important that we're in the midst of pain to keep doing the things that we enjoy, to keep living, to laugh. And good friends will help us with this, and also will stop us from staying too long into self-pity. There will be self-pity, but too long, a friend will just help us out. A friend will stop us from over-analyzing, but be just there to love us, pray for us, and be with us. It's very important not to get isolated, and particularly important not to put up a barrier. If we have been hurt, if we have lost trust, it's easy just to put up a barrier and say, well, I'm going to guard myself now. I won't love too much. I won't hope too much. But actually, what we do is that we trap ourselves inside with fear, and we become slaves to the inner voices of despair. It's important, therefore, that we find one or two friends who we can be real with. Vulnerability carries astonishing power, because we let people in, and they let us in. And it's a beautiful gift of healing. For the last 40 plus years, I've been in a prayer triplet, not the same group because we've moved around a lot, but wherever we've moved, I've been part of a prayer triplet. I couldn't have got through my discipleship without it. There are times we've laughed, and those of you who are in one will know this. There are times we've wept. There are times we've been, you know, just not knowing what to say when things have been hurtful for one of them. But we've actually prayed for each other and stood there for each other, loved each other, and it's been a huge source of strength. So the importance of honesty. And then I come to this fourth key, and it's this wonderful word, reorientation. And I love this word especially because it's a KXC word, and I've heard it so many times when I've listened to the talks here. But it's a great word because it means a new way of seeing, a new way of looking. In this stage, we're enlarged. We have a greater capacity to love and to give away. Pain can either define us. And I guess many of you will have met people, as I have, who have been defined by their grief. Something happened a year, several years ago, and they've stopped growing, and that's who they've become. or pain can liberate us to a greater capacity to enjoy life and to love. In this book I mentioned, Alan Emerson, who was on this huge journey processing the pain of his wife who died, said that his counsellor asked him one day, "What are you going to do with your pain?" It's a very profound question. What are you going to do with your pain? And he had to think, what decision am I going to make? He couldn't go back, that wasn't an option. He couldn't stand still. He'd learnt to lean into the pain, to live with the uncertainty and the questions and the grief and the loneliness until there was a gradual awakening of hope. And one day he says that he was talking with God, and he said to God, "I have got all this love in my heart for Lindsay, the wife who died. What am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with all this love?" And he felt the whisper of God say to him one day, "Give it away, son. Give it away." That's the power of God coming into our darkness, staying with us in the darkness and pain, not hurrying us on before time. But as we allow God in the silence and the waiting, he enlarges our heart so we can love with greater compassion. In the case of the author, he decided that he and his wife had been to Uganda. They'd helped at a school there. So he went back with some mates some years later and built a school in Uganda. Many of the charities that I guess are from this church and in this area, many, I imagine, will have come out of somebody's pain. What can I do to help others? This is the fruit of allowing God in. And I want to look at two ways that we find our heart is being enlarged through pain. And the first is a change in perspective. Listen to Job at the end of his journey. I love this. You remember how he protested to God, rightly so. And he says now, "I know you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted." Job 42:2. "My ears have heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you." There's a whole new perspective. There's a new song in his heart. It was a tough journey, but that's where he's arrived. And you know, many of the hymns, and I guess the songs too, but many, Tom would tell me if this is true, but many of the hymns we sing have come out of darkness where people have faced great pain. Maybe a loss of faith evening, and where they've discovered afresh the grace of God, the love of God. There's a song that I love that I think I've heard sung here. It's an old one, very old one. "When peace like a river attendeth my way." I know it sounds old-fashioned, but the chorus goes, it is well with my soul. And whenever I sing it, I feel something stir in me, because this man wrote it sometime after his wife and two daughters were killed in an accident. He'd been through the process, but his heart now had a new song. "It's well with my soul." And that's what God is taking us through. God doesn't send pain. We live in a broken world where there's a lot of pain. But the wonderful thing is God uses the pain to enlarge our hearts. And secondly, we have a greater capacity to love and bring comfort, as I've said. Paul writes, "Just as the sufferings of Christ flow over into our lives, so also through Christ our comfort overflows. If we're distressed, it's for your comfort. If we are comforted, it's for your comfort. What we have, we give away." Now, I want to say, I love this church. I love so much of what you're doing. It is a party church. I love hearing all the parties. But it's a church, too, that knows how to party and how to comfort. And I love that. And I know many of you are engaged in initiatives, helping people in all kinds of ways. And I believe God is looking for all of us to encounter God more deeply in our suffering and pain. All of us have suffering at some level. We don't know what lies ahead. What we do know is that God will be in it, with us, and through it, God will give us a greater capacity to praise him and to serve him and to comfort others. And it's my prayer that through your serving God, through your loving God, through your loving each other, through your healing the wounds of each other, you will continue to bring about transformation in King's Cross. May God bless each of you richly.